only thing we have to fear is...
In war, there is no substitute for victory.
Let us never negotiate out of fear.
We stand undivided, forever united, fighting hand in hand for the liberty we burn, for glory and honor, for our sons and daughters, ever mindful of the lessons we've learned. Let the torch of freedom burn.
Abraham Lincoln said, "We the people are the rightful masters of both Congress and the courts, not to overthrow the Constitution, but to overthrow the men who pervert the Constitution."
Welcome to the intersection of faith and politics. It's Wall Builders Live with David Barton and Rick Green, and you found us on Thursday, which means it's Foundations of Freedom Thursday. It's our chance to talk about issues that relate to the Constitution, and as that little guy there is talking about, making sure we get people out of office that are trying to overthrow the Constitution or expand the, I shouldn't say expand the Constitution, David, I should say pervert the Constitution.
Yeah, pervert the Constitution, and that can be by expansion. I mean, a lot of times we have founders talking about those who would seize power unto themselves or accrue power to themselves, and that's not a good tendency. And there have been times historically where that the president would try to accrue power to himself, or where the Congress would try to do too much, or where the courts would try to do too much. And that's one of the great things about the Constitution, is it does provide checks and balances, or what Alexander Hamilton called the constitutional arms of self-defense. So when you get someone in office who does try to go too far, there are ways to stop that constitutionally. Of course, they only work if you use them, but there are ways provided in the Constitution to do that. And that is a tendency that people will do unconstitutional things by perverting or stretching the Constitution beyond what it was intended to do.
Well, if we take ourselves back to the Founding Fathers, and you're sitting in that room back when they put the Constitution together, I mean, here they had, you know, won the war, they were finally free. Wasn't one of their main things that they wanted to steer away from was too much power in one person's hand, a tyrannical leader? No matter how good a guy it might have been when you put him in office, if you give him too much power, he's going to abuse it. So they separate it, try to spread it out.
Well, let's go back fundamentally to something even more than that, and only spread it out. They believe that power resided in the people, period. The power was given to the people by God, and those people could entrust it to someone else for temporary periods. So power came from the people, granted from the people. The people made a compact that said, here's how we want the power distributed and how we want it set up. So always the people were in charge of government. Now, I say that not in the sense of a democracy, because it was never a democracy. The difference with saying that today and saying it then is they believed that they had a fixed moral law, what they call the laws of nature, nature's God. There were certain things even they couldn't do. They could not decide that murder would not be a crime. They could not decide that arson would not be. Those are part of the common law, which we incorporate in the Constitution and the Seventh Amendment. But those are the laws of nature, nature's God. But because people had a biblical sense of understanding rights and wrongs and morals back then, within those morals, people have the power. And then they can say, here's how we want it distributed. And that's why in the Constitution, nearly all the power comes back to the branch closest to the people. Now, overwhelmingly, Congress gets the most. Now, Congress is going to be out of bounds at times. There are clearly times when it is, as it was in the election of 1800, in that lame duck session before John Adams left office and Thomas Jefferson came in. Congress did a bunch of stuff then that was not right, and it was pushed back on by the next Congress and by the courts, and by the president and the secretary of state, by the way. So it's not that Congress is infallible. They will make mistakes, but they're going to make less mistakes than the others. And the belief was, and Jefferson said it, look, if there's a constitutional problem, you don't change the Constitution. You educate the people and they will take care of it. So that's why within the three branches, there is checks and balance, but they tend to favor and they tend to lean more toward the Congress in Article One than toward the other branches. Because in Article One, every 2 years or every 6 years, you can get rid of those guys and you can get rid of what they're doing and the direction they're heading at, which you can't with the courts. It's every 4 years with the president, but he leaves behind a legacy of bureaucracies and agencies and regulatory rules and other things that are harder to disembowel than just congressmen themselves.
Well, speaking of that bureaucracy, let's look at a specific issue here, and that's the president's appointments to head these agencies and what judges. I mean, all kinds of appointments the president gets to make. And like you're saying,
and
the Congress.
By the way, all kinds of appointments means 4,000. So
4,000.
Yeah, we're talking about 4,000 appointments to the president. That's a lot of agencies and a lot of people and a lot of deputy agencies and a lot of, but 4,000 appointments the president gets to make.
And so instead of that just being whoever he wants at any time with no accountability, even though the guy has been elected, or gal, in the future a female president, even though they're elected by the people, there still needs to be some sort of check and balance there. And so the founders put in place the advice and consent of the Senate. But yet there is a way for a president to appoint sometimes without the advice and consent of the Senate, and that's the recess appointment that the founders did give the president the power to do. But, man, we're seeing so much of that now, the recess appointment being used, not in the way that the founders intended. I mean, you could see, I mean, back then, if you're only in Congress for a few weeks or a few months and then you're gone for 6, 8, 10 months because they didn't want to live in Washington back then, you could see a need for this. I mean, you get some key person that's heading up an agency or a judge or whatever, and they die or they leave office. I can understand a need for the president to be able to do that and not have to wait 6 or 8, 10 months for the Senate to come back. But, you know, if they're gone for the weekend, is that really what the founders intended?
Yeah, and let's establish the constitutional basis of what we're talking about. Over the last two sessions of Congress, for the first time, certainly in my lifetime, your lifetime, and we think for all the history of Congress, Congress has started its session by reading the Constitution. They enacted a rule some 4 years ago, said you can't even submit a bill now unless you can at least cite constitutional basis. Now, we still got guys citing, you know, nebulous things like the necessary proper clause, the general welfare clause, the commerce clause. All right, that's fine. But at least they're having to acknowledge the Constitution does have something. And so within the reading of the Constitution, let's take this part that deals with recess appointments and let you hear what it says. Now, this particular part of the Constitution, as they went through Congress, let each person read a part of the Constitution. Dinah DeGette, she's reading this part of the Constitution. She is a Democrat out of the Denver area from Congress. Actually, she has some notoriety in that the bubble bill for abortion clinics that said you can't criticize abortion within a number of feet of an abortion clinic. She's the one who did that bill that went to the Supreme Court that they upheld. So we now have free speech free zones. You can't speak in those areas. But nonetheless, she's reading this part of the Constitution. So here's what the Constitution says. This is out of Article 2, Section 2, Paragraph 3 of the Constitution. This is what it says.
I now yield to the gentlewoman from Colorado, Ms. DeGette.
The president shall have power to fill up all vacancies that may happen during the recess of the Senate by granting commissions which shall expire at the end of the next session.
All right, so that's a legitimate, it makes sense. You would not can understand why they put that in there.
Well, let's go back to what you mentioned earlier. There is a part of the Constitution that has another very interesting clause. Let's hear it for just a second.
I yield to the gentleman from Tennessee, Mr. Fleischman.
The Congress shall assemble at least once in every year, and such meeting shall begin at noon on the third day of January, unless they shall by law appoint a different day.
So wait, at least once in every year? It sounds like you're almost having to drag them to Washington instead of the day. We got to drag them back home.
Yeah, wouldn't it be great if it said you have to adjourn at least once a year? I mean,
get
them out of town. But that tells you something about the climate at the time, is we want Congress to meet at least once a year. Now, if that was their, and of course their idea was the government's not supposed to do that much anyway. Government is local. It is state. It is local communities. There's not that much the feds are supposed to do. There's only 18 things the Constitution allows the Congress to do under the enumerated powers, Article 1. So since they're not doing that much, we're going to require you to meet at least once a year. There's going to be some kind of consistency, some kind of regularity so that you will know that Congress meets. Now, that infers already that they're not going to be there all that long. And in those early sessions, they met, 4, 5, 6 months sometimes. So when you're out of town for 6 months, the president's still got to conduct the affairs of the nation. The courts, they're still available. So in that 6 month period of time, are we going to say the president cannot make any appointments because Congress, the Senate is not in town to confirm those appointments? No. That's where they said, okay, in this 6 months while we're gone, if you need to appoint someone to do something, if the Secretary of War goes out of office and we have to have a Secretary of War, you appoint that and we'll confirm them when we get back, or at least we'll address the issue. We may not confirm them, but you'll let us deal with it when we get back, but we'll give you the permission to do something in the interim. For that short period of time, 6 months or whatever the time is, until we get back in town, you can have a recess appointment power, and that's what the Constitution authorizes.
So totally reasonable. You know, makes sense. Something you got to feel. That's not what's happening, though. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll find out how that's being abused. Stay with us here on Wild Builders Live.
President Thomas Jefferson said, "I know no safe depository of the ultimate powers of the society, but the people themselves. And if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion by education. This is the true corrective of abuses of constitutional power."
It's a history-making world record. Last year, we celebrated the 225th anniversary of the U.S. Constitution. What better way to celebrate our freedom than to rediscover the freedom formula in that document? You don't have to go through a year-long monotone professor boring class to do that. The Constitution Alive is a fun, entertaining way to bring the Constitution to life for you and your family. It's kind of like the difference between when you buy a gadget and you get the big, thick user manual, you know, the one we all throw in the trash, versus that quick start guide, the nice, glossy fold-out with the pictures that just shows you how to plug everything in. Government's the same way. This is the quick start guide to America's Constitution. We're just going to show you how, as a citizen, you can plug everything in. It's a quick way to learn how to become an effective citizen. You're going to learn the specific things our Constitution authorizes the government to do. We cover everything from executive orders, recess appointments, judicial activism, and the proper role of the courts, amendments to the Constitution, and most importantly, our role as citizens and what we need to do to preserve our constitutional republic for future generations. Constitution Alive. It includes a hilarious look at history with comedian Brad Stein. We got David Barton's presentation on God and the Constitution. You get a copy of the Constitution Made Easy, and you also get a detailed study guide as we go through the course on DVD. Visit rickgreen.com today, or you can visit wallbuilderslive.com for more information.
Let the torch of freedom burn.
Thomas Jefferson said, "The Constitution of most of our states and of the United States assert that all power is inherent in the people, that they may exercise it by themselves, that it is their right and duty to be at all times armed, that they are entitled to freedom of person, freedom of religion, freedom of property, and freedom of press."
Well, here we are on Foundations of Freedom Thursday. Welcome back to Wall Builders Live. We're talking about a specific issue in the Constitution, recess appointments. Dave, we've already established that's a legitimate function. It's laid out right there in the Constitution.
But Rick, I am so distracted. Jefferson, to be at all times armed. I don't think that has struck me before. This is a Second Amendment program all of a sudden. To be at all times armed. We're supposed to be on recess appointments. I'm now intrigued with that at all times armed.
Hey, we need to do a whole program on that. I mean, that's a great example of, hey, you really want to defend yourself, not only against, you know, some attacker on the street, but against a tyrannical government. Just make sure everybody knows, hey, these citizens are armed.
I got to tell you, this happened just this week. And, you know, we're always looking through, reading old documents, always finding new things. It's kind of like the Bible. The Bible describes itself as unsearchable. You'll never get to the bottom of all the knowledge that's there. Just this week, and looking at Jefferson and the University of Virginia, because we've dealt with that, and in the book Jefferson Lies, we go through that, looking at what he did with teaching religion there. But we also found that Jefferson at the University of Virginia required that every single student go through gun exercises at the University of Virginia. If you're going to go to his university, you have to know how to use the gun, learn how to use the gun. You had to learn how to be militia. They took you through military exercises as well. It's kind of like a ROTC program, every single student. And I thought, you know, we're talking about here in Texas doing something like campus carry or something else. Wouldn't that drive the liberals crazy to find that Jefferson required every student on campus to go through gun training and guns and use guns and et cetera?
Man, that's a great point. We got to get that to our friend Senator Birdwell that's trying to get that done in Texas.
I did. Yeah, I sent it to this House and Senate guys and said, hey, guys, here's some ammunition for your campus carry bill.
No pun intended, right? And now they can just say, hey, Jefferson wanted every kid on campus to be armed. We're just asking for the ones that want to be.
Yeah,
back
to that quote that got me set off on this, at all times armed. I mean, yeah. That's pretty, well, I'm sorry. So back to recess appointments. My bad.
No, it's great. Good point. So here are the recess appointments. Legitimate function of the president to take care of. We established right before the break because, you know, sometimes these guys, the Congress was gone for 6-8 months at a time. And so you had a position that might, come open. But there's another part of this that, you know, in this case, the president is appointing when they're gone for the weekend or maybe they're August, you know, a few weeks or are gone for Christmas. But not only is he appointing it when they're really not in a recess, he's appointing people that he had already said he wanted to appoint, and they were refusing to confirm. Yeah. So, I mean, these are people he couldn't even get through a liberal Senate.
Yeah, his own Senate, the Democrat Senate, was refusing to confirm these guys because they were too far out. And so what he does is Congress goes home for the weekend and says, oh, that's a recess. I can appoint them. And the deal is you appoint them, and they last till the end of the next session. That's generally interpreted to be till the next election. So what he's saying is I can appoint them and they'll be there another 12, 15, 18 months. Look at what they can do in 15, 18. In this case, he appointed 3 members, I believe it was, to the National Labor Relations Board. And that's the kind of the pro-union board, or can be pro-union if you load it up with union people, telling businesses what they have to do. These are the guys who write the regulations, and the regulations become law. After they're put in the Federal Register, then that's labor law for all these businesses. So what he does is he goes in on a weekend and basically over that 3-day weekend and says, okay, you guys are in recess. You can't confirm my guys. So here's what I'm doing. I'm appointing them, and they automatically go in. And so what happened was some business people, Chamber of Commerce kind of folks, sued the president and said, that's not what recess appointments is. You can't do that. And so finally it goes through the courts. It gets to the D.C. Court of Appeals. And that's whenever you sue anything that's going on federal law type stuff, that's where it's going to end up, D.C. Court of Appeals, because that deals with the stuff going in D.C. and Washington. And the Court of Appeals, I mean, lo and behold, they did a brilliant exposition of here's the history of the Constitution. Here's why the Constitution gave you this clause. Here's what. And by the way, I want to quote for just a second from a commentary from Joseph Story. The commentaries on the Constitution that a lot of folks still use today, I think it's probably the best commentaries on the Constitution out there, done in 1833, Stories put on the court by James Madison. This is what he said about that particular clause in talking about the presidents and appointments and how you get his appointments confirmed. He says there's but one of two courses to be adopted. Either that the Senate should be perpetually in session in order to provide for the appointment of officers, or that the president should be authorized to make temporary appointments during the recess, which should expire when the Senate should have an opportunity to act on the subject. The former course would have been at once burdensome to the Senate and expensive to the public. In other words, you're going to keep Senate in session for 6 more months out of every year, and all they're going to do is be there just in case the president needs to make an appointment to see if they confirm it or reject it. He said, but the latter way, that of allowing recess appointments, combines convenience, promptitude of action, and general security. So that's the two options you had, and what we chose to do was, all right, we'll let you do temporary recess appointments, but they expire as soon as the Senate comes back and has the opportunity to act on them. Now, that's still, again, generally interpreted now, and I think probably wrongly so, to be at the end of the next session. Because if Senate comes back in on Monday and has an opportunity to act and say, we still refuse to act on this, you've got your notice. They're not going to confirm. So they should expire at that point in time. But nonetheless, traditionally, they hold it through to the end of the next session. So the president thought he had some appointments that would last here for a number of months, year and a half, and they could cram through all their agenda. And the Court of Appeals in D.C. said, no, here's the Constitution, here's the purpose, here's the reason. It was not for a weekend recess. It was for when Congress adjourns at the end of the session for that long period of time. And even today, that's not a long period of time. It's usually 6 to 8 weeks. But nonetheless, that's what it was designed for. So here's a great decision by the courts going back to the Constitution, pulling back in the president. And by the way, as a result of what's happened, about 100 decisions made by the National Labor Relations Board will now be in limbo because they were made really illegally. You didn't have a quorum on there because these confirmations don't count. And also, he did that with some federal judges. He put in federal judges kind of like over the weekend because they weren't getting confirmed. So even the decisions of those federal judges ruled in federal courts are now going to be probably in limbo because they were not constitutionally appointed authorized officers. This is good news.
It is good news. And, you know, we talked about there at the beginning of the program that the whole reason for this advice and consent in the Constitution was some checks and balances on the president and the and this court that handed down, really slapped the president's hand on this. This is what they said. They said allowing the president to define the scope of his own appointments power would eviscerate the Constitution's separation of power. So, they're saying, look, you allow this. You allow this guy to just appoint anytime Congress leaves town for the weekend, and you're eviscerating the constitutional separation of powers and making him a tyrannical leader. So this was really good that they're pulling him back in.
It is. And revisionism abounded at the White House. Jay Carney, who commented on this, said, hey, presidents in both parties have been doing this for 150 years. No, they've been doing recess appointments. They haven't been doing weekend appointments. So even the White House is trying to cover its tail by saying, hey, everybody does. It didn't matter if everybody does it or not. Even if they were right, the Constitution is still what runs the land.
Yeah, absolutely. Back in a moment, folks, more on, sorry to say Good News Friday, because it's such a good news decision by this court, but it's Foundations of Freedom Thursday. Stay with us.
Hey guys, this is Tim Barton with Wall Builders. And I know you hear my dad and Rick talk a lot about our founding fathers, about the original intent of our nation, the constitutional heritage that we have, and really we've seen how far we've slipped away from that. And I know a lot of us, as we hear my dad and Rick talk, think, I wish there was a place that I could go and I could see these documents and I could read and learn about the founding fathers firsthand, see the things they did. And I want to give you some websites today that can help you accomplish that very thing. If you get online, you can go to places like Library of Congress and you can look under their Century of Lawmaking or historical documents. You can go to the Avalon Project, to the Founders Constitution, to Google Books, or even the Internet Archives, or you can just go to Wall Builders' website. We have a section for our library, and under that section we have different subgroups for historical documents, historical writings, even a place where you can get helpful links to find out more information about other websites where you can do research for yourself and find the truth for yourself. Friends, this is the time that we need to know who we are and where we came from. Wallbuilders.com is a great place to go.
Let the torch of freedom burn.
President Calvin Coolidge said, "The more I study the Constitution, the more I realize that no other document devised by the hand of man has brought so much progress and happiness to humanity. To live under the American Constitution is the greatest political privilege that was ever accorded to the human race."
Welcome back to Wall Builders Live, man. Isn't that the truth? It has produced the most successful nation in history. That's why it's so important, David, for us to learn about the Constitution and to preserve those basic principles here. And separation of powers being one of those, recess appointments, we gotta keep a close eye on that. There's some other attempts in our final few minutes, David. I want to run by you. There's a lot of people really concerned because there's a congressman that has filed a bill to get rid of the term limits that the 22nd Amendment put in place. Wants Obama to be able to serve more than two terms. I don't think this is a real concern. I don't think there's any chance this will pass. But, you know, some people are concerned about it. So let's address it.
Well, let's listen to the 22nd Amendment. We're going to have Louis Gohmert read this. Louis Gohmert is our friend, congressman from here in Texas on Judiciary Committee. And it just happened that this was the part he was to read. But here's what the 22nd Amendment is that this congressman wants to repeal.
I'm pleased to yield to the gentleman from Texas, Mr. Gohmert.
Amendment 22, Section 1. No person shall be elected to the office of the president more than twice, and no person who has held the office of president or acted as president more than 2 years of a term to which some other person was elected president shall be elected to the office of president more than once.
So what you've got there is parliamentary procedure. If you hold a term for more than half the term, that's considered a full term. So if a president gets assassinated one day before halfway and you, the vice president, serve for 2 years and one day, that's considered a full term as president. But this came out after FDR, after he was elected four terms, and they said, never again will we do this. This was ratified in 1951. Said, no, this is it. No other president served more than twice. George Washington set the model, the example. It was followed up by Adams and Jefferson and Monroe and everybody else. Two terms was plenty, except for FDR, who went four terms. Then after that, they made a constitutional change, said, no, two terms are going to be it.
Yeah, and it was, what a great example by Washington. It was a way of saying, I don't want to be a king. I don't want to be there that long. And every other president, like you said, followed it. And now, except FDR. So do you think, do you think the American people would go for this to change it back?
Let's back up to see what it takes to repeal. First off, he's got to have a hearing on this thing in Judiciary Committee. He's not going to get a hearing on this in the House Judiciary Committee. There's no way that, and I think Bob Goodlatte is head of House Judiciary this year. He's out of Virginia. There's no way he's going to have a hearing, because there's not a popular groundswell for this. You have a hearing on something when you're pushed to have a hearing on it. We've only had 27 amendments to the Constitution. So, but let's say that Bob did allow a hearing on this in judiciary, and that for whatever reason, it came through judiciary and it goes out to the floor for a vote. You're going to have to get two-thirds, by the Constitution, you're going to have to get two-thirds of the House and Senate to pass the repeal of the 22nd. And then you're going to have to get three-fourths of the states to ratify the repeal of the 22nd. Now, I think it's more likely that Texas will have a blizzard on 4th of July than it is that this will stand a chance of getting anywhere.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you. I think it's one of those where, you know, we should not get up in arms and spend a lot of time on this one, because the likelihood of it happening is nil. So we should focus more on those battles that are real. I mean, that are really happening right now. I mean, it's not a theoretical, where this is a theoretical change in the Constitution. It's not a theoretical abuse of the Constitution that recess appointments would happen, or a lot of the other things that Obama's doing.
Yeah.
I mean, he's actually abusing the Constitution. It's those real ones we need to be going after.
Yeah, and it's a good thing that the court stepped up on this. But, you know, the other thing we can do is, when we read something like this in the paper, that the National Labor Relations Board, we just need to contact our congressman and say, guys, I've had it with this agency. I want you to not fund them in the coming session. I mean, that is something that we as people can do, because that helps bring the attention of our elected officials to abuses by various agencies. And they don't see that all the time. I mean, they're not reading the paper. They rely on us to let them know. And then they'll look at it and say, oh, yeah, let's cut the funding for this agency. This is nonsense. So that is something that we as citizens can do, in addition to filing lawsuits if we need to. But that's something we can do to watch over the growth of government.
And that's the whole idea of making sure that we as citizens are part of preserving the Constitution. That's why we're doing these Thursday programs. We've got to get educated on the Constitution, but we don't want to have just a theoretical conversation about it. It's not just an academic
that's
exercise
right.
here. This is about getting educated so you can go take action, and that's the perfect way to do it. Let your members of Congress know as well. Let's get them educated, make sure they're doing the right thing, and then hold them accountable in the next election. Thanks for listening today. You've been listening to Wall Builders Live with David Barton and Rick Green.
Thomas Jefferson said, "In questions of power, then let no more be heard of confidence in man, but bind him down for mischief by the chains of the Constitution."
We stand undivided.